A U.S. appeals court has overturned a lower court ruling that Timothy McVeigh's execution must be videotaped. Earlier today, a federal district court judge in Pittsburgh, hearing an unrelated death penalty case, ordered the taping. Defense lawyers in that case wanted the tape as evidence that federal executions are cruel and unusual punishment. McVeigh's death sentence for the Oklahoma City bombing is scheduled to be carried out Monday. The 1995 blast at the Murrah Federal Building killed 168 people. McVeigh remains unremorseful.
In the weeks after the bombing, many facts about Timothy McVeigh's background emerged. He grew up in a middle-class family in upstate New York. He was a decorated veteran of Desert Storm. And McVeigh talked about his motivation. He described to several people how and why he blew up the Murrah Building. NPR's Wade Goodwin talked to two of them, a psychiatrist and a sociologist, who were hired by McVeigh's defense team to help with the case. He has this report.
At first, the nation didn't believe an American could have done it. Surely it was the work of some foreign terrorist group. But after 3 days, America learned the bitter truth. The terrorist was one of its own.
He made the choice to do it. He planned it. He knew exactly what he was doing. He had hoped for more than 168 casualties and told me so. He said he thought at least 400 people would be killed.
Dr. John R. Smith is a psychiatrist who, at the request of Timothy McVeigh's defense attorney, interviewed the bomber 6 times at the El Reno Federal Prison outside Oklahoma City. Stephen Jones, McVeigh's attorney, asked Smith to find out if McVeigh was insane. Could he assist in his own defense? Psychologically, who was this man? Smith says McVeigh was not only sane, but intelligent and well-mannered.
Tim talked very openly and in some detail about the bombing itself, about his motivation for the bombing. He, in fact, talked, I thought, too comfortably about that.
It seemed to be a point of pride with McVeigh. He wanted it understood that he was certainly not sorry for what he'd done. Smith tried to figure out why. As he progressed through his interviews, Smith began to believe the problem with McVeigh started when he was a young teenager.
He had grown up in a family where there was quite a lot of anger between his mother and father, that his mother went out at night against the wishes of his father, that he thought she might, in fact, be having affairs with men, as the father would accuse him of. He said his father had a terrible temper, and that even when he was quite young, there were horrendous verbal fights between his parents in their bedroom at night.
McVeigh granted Smith permission to speak about their sessions. McVeigh told Smith that there were times he thought his parents would kill each other while he listened. Over time, McVeigh developed a strategy to block out the screaming from his parents' room. He would fantasize, submerge himself in dreams where he was the hero, winning the day for the underdogs.
I asked him what he fantasized about. He said, well, I was always the hero that saved people from the... He was fighting the bad guys. And that fantasy continued, his ability to fantasize, has continued, as far as I can tell, to the present time.
Smith believes McVeigh's habit of using fantasy to help him cope with his unhappy life ended up playing a significant role in the bombing. As he grew up, Timothy McVeigh first read comic books, then science fiction. When his grandfather introduced the teenager to guns, McVeigh took to them with a passion. According to the book American Terrorist, written by two reporters from McVeigh's hometown paper, guns made the thin, physically awkward boy feel more confident, and he became an expert shot. He began reading gun magazines and thinking of himself as a survivalist. It was in Soldier of Fortune that he came across a book that would end up shaping his worldview and his politics, a book called The Turner Diaries. It's a right-wing fantasy written by a former member of the American Nazi Party, William Pierce. The hero of the book, Earl Turner, loves guns and eventually responds to the federal government's increasingly strict gun laws by blowing up the FBI's headquarters in Washington. The country is then thrown into chaos and a second American Revolution follows. The Turner Diaries laid out for Timothy McVeigh a blueprint for political action. Blow up a building, start a revolution, change the country. If most Americans believe you can't fight City Hall, the Turner Diaries changed that for McVeigh. He loved the book and began showing it to his closest friends.
His fantasy of fighting the bad guy, the biggest bad guy in town, which in his mind became the federal government, he had always had a kind of siege mentality.
If the Turner Diaries taught Timothy McVeigh about politics, it was the Army that taught him how to be a soldier, how to carry out a mission, and how to kill the enemy. In 2 years, McVeigh rose from raw recruit to sergeant and one of the Army's best gunners. He was an incredible shot. In Desert Storm, out in the lead on the Army's left flanking maneuver, he killed two Iraqi machine gunners with one shot from 1,000 yards away from a moving Bradley fighting vehicle. His comrades were stunned at his ability. On his chest, McVeigh would eventually wear the Bronze Star, the Army Commendation Medal, and the Expert Rifleman's Crest. Psychiatrist John Smith believes that McVeigh would have been a natural leader had he stayed in the Army.
If he had been in the Special Forces, that would have been right up his alley, and there would have been no Oklahoma City by Tim McVeigh anyway.
After Desert Storm, McVeigh tried out for the Green Berets, but weakened by the war, he washed out after 2 days. In frustration, he left the Army. Smith says it was a fateful decision. McVeigh would never again experience the success he'd had in the military. He returned home to a depressed economy in Pendleton, New York, to sleep on his father's couch. His room had been given to his sister. To his surprise, he couldn't find a job. The decorated Army veteran ended up a security guard, which he found humiliating. He couldn't find a girlfriend, which he desperately wanted. Slowly, over the next 13 months, McVeigh fell into depression. His empty civilian life was a bitter contrast to his previous success. He was going nowhere, and Smith says McVeigh became suicidal.
On one occasion, he called the VA hospital in Florida to ask for the mental health clinic, and when he spoke to them, he wanted to know if he could get treatment without using his real name. And they told him no, he could not.
Smith believes McVeigh never recovered from this depression, and that his anger at the government was, to some extent, a manifestation of his frustration about his life. McVeigh left New York and began to drift around the country, staying with his Army buddies Michael Fortier and Terry Nichols. He discovered the gun show circuit and began selling literature and T-shirts. During this time, McVeigh's anger at the federal government slowly became the focus of his life. The killings by the FBI during the siege at Ruby Ridge, Idaho in 1992 underscored McVeigh's growing conviction that the federal government was first going to take away citizens' guns and then their rights. The authors of the anti-government books that McVeigh read warned of just such a future. McVeigh began to see the evidence all around him, and then came Waco. Like many Americans, on April 19, 1993, McVeigh watched the Branch Davidian complex burn to the ground on television. He was in Michigan at Nichols Farm. He reportedly turned to Terry Nichols, tears streaming down his face, and asked, "What has America become?" Smith says that while Waco had most Americans shaking their heads, in Timothy McVeigh, the tragedy stoked a murderous fury.
And he told me at that moment that a depth of rage engulfed him like he had never experienced before. It was like all the bullies of his life, all the bully both in reality and in fantasy of his life. He identified with the Davidians. If anything, he has regularly over-identified with the devalued or depreciated person. He is the champion of the underdog. He absolutely is, and that's a strong ideal of his. I don't know that he understands that a lot of that comes out of his own identification as an underdog, but it does.
2 years later, McVeigh turned his rage against federal employees in Oklahoma City. Apparently, he was not completely satisfied even after he blew up the Murrah Building. Stuart Wright is a professor of sociology at Lamar University and co-author of the book Armageddon at Waco. Wright was brought in by McVeigh's defense team to help his lawyers understand why McVeigh became so obsessed with Waco. McVeigh wanted his lawyers to argue that he blew up the federal building out of political necessity. Wright says the lawyers rejected that strategy.
He wanted to stand up, I think, in court and say, "Yes, I bombed the Murrah Building, and here's why I did it." And it was retaliation for Waco. It was tit for tat, dirty for dirty, and I'm not ashamed of doing it. There was going to be no justice, so I had to take justice in my own hands.
Wright says there was one other important motivation for McVeigh's act, one that harkens back to the book The Turner Diaries.
I think he believes that the bombing of the Murrah Building might actually mobilize all these people to revolt and that there would be sort of a revolution.
But the Turner Diaries was fiction written by an American Nazi. McVeigh's attraction to such fantasy was his Achilles heel.
He saw himself as sort of a special operations soldier on special assignment behind enemy lines. And he sees that he sees the bombing of the Murrah Building as a successful mission.
Having failed to make the Green Berets, Timothy McVeigh commissioned an army of one and ordered his own special assignment. He chose the Murrah Building in part because the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms had an office there, and its agents were involved in Waco. But the vast majority of the people McVeigh would kill were ordinary civil service workers. Why didn't he care that they would die too? McVeigh's friend Michael Fortier asked McVeigh that question 4 months before the bombing. That was when McVeigh showed Fortier the building he'd picked out to destroy. In court, Fortier testified that McVeigh answered by comparing himself to Luke Skywalker in Star Wars. McVeigh said Skywalker killed innocent people when he destroyed Darth Vader's Death Star, but that because those people worked for the evil empire, their fate was justifiably sealed. McVeigh's use of science fiction to rationalize the moral bankruptcy of his action is surprising only if you don't know Timothy McVeigh's history. Psychiatrist John Smith.
I think he compared it to a mission, like a B-52 bomber pilot. He focused on the bombing, the mission, the warrior element in it, but not ignoring the fact that warriors don't go out and kill women and children.
4 years later, McVeigh seems to have no regret about the appalling consequences of his action. His angry ideology is still intact. Although the government has taken control over what little remains of Timothy McVeigh's life, his last words will reiterate his defiance. McVeigh told reporters that he has chosen an excerpt from William Ernest Henley's 19th century poem Invictus. "I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. Early Monday morning, the hatred that has been the guiding light of Timothy McVeigh's existence will be extinguished in Terre Haute, Indiana." Wade Goodwin, NPR News, Oklahoma City.